Hi, good morning everyone. My name is Amélie Godin. I'm a new professor at UC Davis. Kate Scow was to present the results of this long-term trial. She couldn't make it and asked me to come present on her behalf. But anyway, I'm really happy to be here today. Thanks for the invitation. And we're going to take a trip to California from the Midwest, and I will be introducing some results from a long-term trial, which is pretty unique from the climate. It's a Mediterranean climate, and offers some thoughts as to sustainability and resilience and some learnings. So we've been talking about the Midwest, where we have somewhat regular rainfalls and temperature spikes in the summer. In California, we have a Mediterranean climate with very low rainfall in the summer. And the big difference is actually that while we've been talking about two crops, corn and soybean, in the Midwest, we are surrounded by 400 crops. And this is actually a challenge when we want to design long-term trials, because there's no rotation that is actually going to reflect what's going on in the field. So what I will be showing you are kind of model systems for California. So the cropping systems are extremely diverse. We have low soil carbon sequestration potential and organic matter compared to Midwest soils. Most of our carbon sequestration is done through perennials, almonds, walnuts, pistachios, vineyards, etc. And we rely on irrigation water. You've probably heard about the major drought which has been affecting California over the last 4 years. This is the state of our snowpack as of last season. We were around 9% statewide of what it is historically, and you can see here, this is at April 1st, we were at 18% of the snowpack, 21%, and 18% down south. This snowpack is very important as it's the source of our irrigation water. 9 out of the 12 major reservoirs were or are below 50% capacity. All were far below historical averages. So we're dealing with an agriculture who is extremely reliant on irrigation, and we're increasingly lacking irrigation water. As a result, we've seen more and more groundwater pumping, and the groundwater reserves are steadily decreasing. What does that mean for the landscape? Well, this year we had 8 to 10% of our land fallow, and water resources are being increasingly dedicated to perennials just because of added values. And here on this graph you can see the increase in acreages of almonds, but this is just one crop. Perennials in general are increasing a lot. And because the perennials are not too flexible in terms of irrigation water, we've seen a lot of orchard turnovers, as well as planting of new orchards as well to capitalize on the high cost of water with higher production. So this is a little bit of the background at the states we're at now. Okay. So the questions of long-term trials, as they are usually formulated, comes to looking at different ecosystem services. And the question is, can we increase sustainability as we increase food production? And I think one of the new questions that come up is the question of resilience. And I'm not sure we're really good at defining it quite yet. But looking at resilience and the ecological outcome of agriculture, as to how do we maintain those different ecosystem services which are the basis of sustainable food production, we such drastic shifts in the landscape and in water resources. Russell Ranch is actually a collaborative platform which has been exploring some of those questions since 1993, were located in the San Joaquin Valley in the Northern California. It's and it has been supporting research of around 300 researchers and students, 77 reports, fact sheets, 67 peer review publications, and more than 50 industry partners. So I'm going to try to put this a little bit all together, but this has been this really shows the potential of long-term research platform to integrate various sciences and disciplines. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of the research and results. There was a lot of things to choose from, what we've learned, and talk a little bit of how do we go beyond sustainability by starting to look at resilience and what does it mean for Mediterranean climate. So Rosa Ranch is also a commercial farm of 1,500 acres, and it has this jewel at the center. And this jewel is the long-term trial that you can see here with, you can see the plot quite clearly here. On both sides, there are wildflower strips where entomologists and other scientists are exploring the impact of greater wildlife diversity in our ecosystem. We have big plots on conventional, organic on both sides, some scaled plots for precision irrigation, and some biochar and soil diversity trials here. What's interesting too is that we have the Puta Creek Riparian Reserve corridor running around and which is connecting us to campus as well, so more experiments in the landscapes can be done. So it's basically 300 acres that are devoted to agricultural sustainability, and this experiment started in 1993 is also called the Century Experiment because we hope to keep it running for a century. It's composed of 72 one-acre plots that looks like this from a closer view. And the different treatment as follow. We have a natural grassland, which is dry land, no nitrogen sources. We have a wheat-based cropping system with some wheat fallow, wheat legume, irrigated dry land, with fertilizer or winter legume cover crop or none. We have a wheat fallow which is irrigated with fertilizer or without fertilizer, a new treatment of alfalfa tomato corn, which represents the increased alfalfa in the landscape to fuel an ever-growing dairy industry. And we have a tomato-based cropping system, all irrigated along a nitrogen and carbon gradient. This tomato cropping system, we have a conventional wheat tomato, which is irrigated and fertilized, a conventional corn tomatoes, which is irrigated and fertilized, and we have an integrated system, which is a combination of both fertilizer and winter legume cover crops. We have a transitional system with manure and winter legume cover crop, which is transitioning to the organic system. Which is mostly which is fertilized just with manure and cover crop and managed as an organic system. So basically creating this nitrogen and carbon gradient and this water gradient as well. And this gradient has been used to understand the relationship between sustainability and external inputs, and a lot of indicator of performance have been proposed. I think what was really cool when this trial was designed is that subplot, microplots were integrated into this long-term trial, which make it a very versatile research and education platform. So there's the zone in the middle are used for long-term yield gathering, and there's two sets of microplots on both sides where investigators can come and ask different questions and create more treatments without disturbing the long-term yields and other parameters. These microplots have been used to look at different nitrogen input and doses, look at different cover crop mixes, for instance, different crop varieties, even some gels to enhance moisture retention. So it really unleashes some potential for researchers to come and test some hypotheses on this long-term management treatments. On a more or less regular basis, we've been measuring different parameters. Yields on our measure, of course, the yearly crop nutrient level, some soil properties, some measure of below ground diversity, greenhouse gases, weed pressure, water use and nutrient losses, and some measure of economic returns. It's also a great extension and education platform, and some produce are even sold for business, such as sun-dried tomatoes. So in terms of looking at the long-term impact of management system, we have this cover crop, this organic fertilizer versus amendment, different input levels, different irrigation levels. And we've been looking at provisioning services, those different supporting services, and regulating services and their interactions. Starting with yields and crop nutritional content, this is the yields for tomatoes in the different system. And we actually, the noteworthy thing here is that the organic tomato yields, which are in light blue, are actually similar than in the other than the other yields, and they're actually more stable around the trend lines. And it's about a decrease in 7% in coefficient of variation compared to conventional. If we look at corn, corn is a different story, as nitrogen has often been limiting in the organic in the organic systems. And here you see here is the conventional, and the other systems are down here. And this has mostly been because of insufficient nitrogen available during grain fillings, and also the impact of cover crop on soil moisture and planting dates. In Mediterranean climate, when water is our primary concern, cover crops are viewed a little bit differently in that they deplete soil moisture early in the season most often, and planting has to be delayed, especially in organic system, which has led to yield lags. If we look at the wheat system, we see that actually the rain-fed wheat systems are performing very well compared to the irrigated system. Fallowing is actually more fallow rotation is actually higher yields than wheat legume, probably because of water as well. This is just coefficient of variation. I just wanted to show you that in rain-fed systems, when the legume is integrated, actually yields are also less variable. In terms of crop nutritional contents, researchers came back and looked at the nutritional content of this yields archived. And they found that significant difference in flavonoid and glycoalkaloid contents between the different systems, and that over time there was a gradual increase in concentration of these two secondary metabolites in organic over a 10-year period, and that was linked to dilution of nitrogen content. When we look at supporting services and regulating ecosystem services, and here I just want to show you some undergrad projects which was done this summer just to highlight the educational value of those long-term trials. Students came and did different measure of organic matter, available P, nitrate, and total nitrogen. The organic systems have higher levels of organic matter, and you can see more about aggregate stability, etc., on a poster which is located in 1517. But another important aspect is carbon sequestration potential, and we see in samples done in 2005, we see that the organic systems were actually accumulating way more carbon and at a faster rate thanks to a higher carbon input in the systems. We have now completed a new set of sampling up to 3 meters deep in all the 72 plots, and these samples are being analyzed for carbon sequestration. What's interesting, what has been shown at this trial as well, is that improving aggregation is also being linked to carbon stabilization, where here we have cumulative carbon input, soil organic carbon sequestered. So as you increase input, of course, you have more carbon sequestered. The residue conversion rate was about 7.6%. The aggregate stability also increased linearly with carbon inputs. We've seen some shifts in aggregate location of carbon stabilization between different input systems, where accumulation of soil organic carbon, thanks to this increase in carbon input, was preferentially sequestered in some microaggregates. When we look at the microbes which are enabling all this carbon and nitrogen cycling, we see that microbial biomass, microbial carbon and microbial nitrogen are consistently higher in those systems with higher nitrogen, higher C inputs, mainly the organic systems here. The microbial communities, as determined by PLFA fingerprintings, were actually dramatically different between those different systems, where we've seen a shift in organic, conventional, and the no input wheat compared to the bulk of the other microbial community. Some researchers have also looked at nematodes and concluded basically that more microaggregates are more nematodes. So when we looked at the long-term impact of management system on microbial community and the direct impact on microenvironments, direct impact on carbon and nitrogen inputs, and their relationship, they found that PLFA biomass was actually greatest in organic, as I just mentioned, but that crop management really influenced those nitrifier and denitrifier communities when it comes down to the nitrogen cycle. But those changes were not being able to relate to large shifts in nitrogen cycling, and so there's probably more going on. The composition of carbon processing microbial community was not directly related to carbon stabilization. And what came down of all, and this is a summary of like 10 papers, so what came down out of those 10 papers is basically that soil aggregate and the direct impact of management on soil aggregates are forming some selective microenvironment that shift microbial distribution and activity, and that more carbon and nitrogen can be processed in those microaggregates. When we talk about nitrogen, it's important to consider cover crops. I just wanted to touch a little bit on a study done by Martin Berger looking at long-term impact of cover crops and soil hydraulic properties. As you have your tomato, cover crop, corn, and a cover crop again. And this is water fluxes around baseline. And basically, a cover crop soil is going to have enhanced infiltration properties compared to a fallow soil. What was interesting in this study is that it was also shown that there's less lateral and greater vertical flow of irrigation water in cover crop compared to winter fallow soils, which might be a problem for leaching and losses of less efficient use of irrigation water. Another important pathways for nitrogen losses is greenhouse gases. This is nitrous oxide emissions. And we have here a difference between with cover crops and without cover crop during the growing season or during the rainy season, and two different irrigation treatments, the blue being furrow irrigated and the green being subsurface drip irrigation, to which we're moving massively. And what we see is that usually cover crop increase net nitrous oxide emissions. But if cover crops are being combined with subsurface drip irrigation, negative impact on climate change agents can be mitigated. California is moving drastically to drip irrigation for because of lack of water, but also because of increase in yields. Here you see the yields of tomatoes in drip irrigation versus furrow irrigation. So we have higher yields in drip this year, which used 18 inches of water to grow a tomato crop versus 31 inches in furrow. So a huge increase in water use efficiencies. Now, when you talk to growers, the question that came up most often is, okay, well, we're moving massively to drip irrigation, but can I really build soil health under subsurface drip irrigation? Scott Park, a very successful organic grower in the region, actually said that he spent decades building up his soil, and we're now wetting about 10% of it. And so he cannot, all this investment in his soil and his soil fertility cannot be harnessed for yield. And to him, it doesn't make sense. So I think there's more information about this kind of question in a poster as well. But when we think about management, long-term management and irrigation, we often think about the impact of management on irrigation and rather less on the impact of irrigation on soil processes. And irrigation, when we actually move from a furrow to a subsurface drip irrigation, has a substantial impact on spatial and temporal water availability. And what we're starting to see here, and I didn't want to show you data because this is very preliminary, is that under subsurface drip irrigation, we see huge changes in aggregation and in soil biological functions. And this can really change this nitrogen and carbon cycle, and especially the carbon sequestration, as I showed you some links between aggregation and carbon sequestration. So that might impact externalities and the system ability to adapt and mitigate to climate change. So I think what we've learned from this long-term trial is first that there's numerous trade-offs and quite few synergies. If you graph it all and you see mitigation and adaptation, there's just one part of the square that actually shows synergies and three-fourths which is going to have some kind of trade-offs. And I think this might be something this is something of great value when it comes down to long-term trials into being able to evaluate those long-term trade-offs and synergies, especially when we think about drip irrigation now, that we think it's improving adaptation because you use less water, it's improving mitigation because less greenhouse gas emission. Is there some downside in terms of carbon sequestration over the long term and soil health over the long term? Another lesson is that long-term trials have been very interesting to quantify interaction, which are key to optimize yields, energy, and water use. I've been trying to demonstrate that organic systems have some value, and when you put them on this 3D plot of energy, total carbon, and water, organic systems actually do not perform very well because they need much more water and because they need much more energy as well. So there's some greater interactions to be looking at. And then when we talk about resilience, and I think that was very interesting, the example from Matt about sudden death syndrome was actually very interesting because unless we stress those systems, we're going to lose a little bit of our power. And some stress and disturbance gradients, those long-term trials provide a wonderful opportunity to apply stress and disturbance gradients and started to look at thresholds and test those transformational ideas rather than those incremental changes we've been looking at. I will just mention here that I've been showing you coefficient of variation when we start looking at yield stability, and those are some very limited measures of yield stability, and that there's new statistical approaches that can be used, and we've been developing some probability density models to look at yield stability, which are much more powerful. And this long-term approach provide a wonderful data set to be looking at this. We've been working on a new science plan for reservation, our long-term trials, and we really envision those long-term trials being sucking in those entrepreneurs from the Silicon Valley, those students, farmers, extension, and some other faculty from different disciplines who are not necessarily drawn to agronomic research, to explore some innovative solutions to the greatest challenges that agriculture is facing and which are going to be necessary to innovate. And I think we also need more continuous monitoring and instrumentation. Due to lack of funding, we really haven't been really exploring the potential of big data like breeders or physiologists are looking at, and we have great opportunities for to use long-term trials for that. We're trying to a little bit with irrigation, looking at integration of monitoring of soil moisture dynamics and crop demand in real time to monitor, regulate irrigation water, and how does that interact with management practices and the long-term impact of management on soil properties. Long-term trials are also wonderful to develop new remote sensing tools. This is a new collaboration with NASA, which they are using the long-term trial as a benchmark for the satellite images, and develop new diagnostic and forecasting tools. So these networks of long-term trials also have an additional value. With that, I will invite you to come and be part of the experiment, visit us, and more information. You can see all the publications and everything I'll be talking about at this website. Thank you. Thank you.